right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right? Let's go. Break it. Break it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in. Rock Chalk Sports Talk is on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert. The guy sitting about 5 feet away from my face, staring directly into my eyes, is Derek Johnson. And we've got you for about 2 hours. We're out early making way for some Kansas women's sports coming up at 5 o'clock. Correct, Derek?
Kansas women's volleyball, to be specific.
That is right. Absolutely. That is 100% correct at 5 o'clock. So we'll get you over there about 10 till 5. And between now and then, we have a lot to get to. Jesse Newell joins us in like 10 minutes. We've got your high school whip around at 3:30. And the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, will join us coming up at 4:15. It's kind of weird to say this, and I don't want to go there yet, but I'm just going to throw this out there in case this is the direction it heads in, because there it has been pretty quiet on the college basketball controversy front over the last 5 days or so. And this is how this kind of stuff happens. Whenever we come out, and I'm not going to back down from it. Like I said, this was going to flip college basketball on its world, on its head. And so for now, I'm going to stick with that. But I guess I expected things perhaps to get moving a little more quickly than they have, because there just hasn't been much to come out of all of this. I know that the guy from Tony Bland from USC hired like one of the most expensive lawyers that money can buy. The same guy who represented El Chapo, the drug lord who got imprisoned and then broke out and then got sent back to prison and then I believe broke out again and then now is back in prison.
Is that kind of a red flag that you hired that same lawyer?
No. And that's what police will always tell you. And I learned this from years and years of watching fictional crime dramas on television.
So very accurate stuff here.
Okay, tell me where I'm wrong. You always hire the best lawyer you can afford. And police, a tactic that they'll use in these shows is they'll say, well, if you're innocent, why do you need a lawyer? You know, that's a bad look. That's a bad look if you hire a lawyer. To who? Because if you're really going to get in trouble, you're going to go to court anyways. And if you're going to go to court, you need a lawyer. So, yes. It does not. It's not a bad look at all. That is a tactic that people will try to use to con you into giving them information without hiring a lawyer. No. If you are looking at serious allegations, you hire a lawyer. And you hire the best lawyer that you can possibly buy. Tony Bland apparently has the money to hire the same lawyer that the leader of the Mexican drug cartels can hire. Who's footing that bill, right? Is USC paying for that? Is Tony Bland, does he have that kind of cash? I would imagine.
You know who could be paying for it?
Who's that?
Any chance that USC is a Nike school, right?
USC is a Nike school. You think Nike's footing that bill?
Who knows?
I doubt that. I doubt that very much. There was a story filed by Dennis Dodd. Well, he sent a tweet out. The story hasn't come out yet. Who said that the one coach who is going to be most impacted by the FBI investigation is a coach who is not even currently coaching. He is sitting behind a desk on TV. Who could that be? Who is the one coach who could be most impacted by this who isn't even coaching right now? I can't. It's hard for me to even conjure up names, because the only one that comes to mind, this is going to sound stupid, the only one who comes to mind is Seth Greenberg. And I'm like, all right, well, Seth Greenberg, like being a fringe tournament team 5 years ago for Virginia Tech, isn't really the kind of scandal I was hoping for this to uncover.
Any chance it goes all the way back to Dickie V?
Well, no. Well, the investigation's only been going for 2 years. So is it Tom Crean? Because it'd have to be somebody who's been coaching within the past 2 years, not somebody who's retired and has made this a full-time gig, right? Tom Crean's the only one who comes to mind.
Which is funny because he's known as a guy for cleaning things up. Like, that's why they brought up his name for Louisville. That's why he came into Indiana.
How funny would it be? How funny would it be if Louisville would have just hired him?
And he gets
popped. Then all of a sudden, like, he's the biggest culprit in all of this. And then Louisville gets popped. Louisville gets popped twice in 2 weeks. At that point, you'd have to shut the program down. You'd say, okay, we're not good at this. We are not good at this at all, at cleaning stuff up, at regulating our rules and keeping our name out of the bad press. But I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go from here, but I'm ready for some more juicy details, right? Like, you got to keep us coming back, because that initial story is only going to be juicy for the first couple of days. Now we're kind of waiting on pins and needles, seeing what else is going to happen here.
Just give us a little breadcrumbs. Give us a little nugget every week or so. Like, honestly, they should do this like the Players Tribune, how they'll release stories with players just writing stuff. Just release like one little excerpt every week. Have a different FBI member type it up.
Are you on the same page as me, though? Are you kind of starting to wonder if maybe this isn't going to be a big a deal as we initially thought it was?
Yes. Either that, or it's going to be something that occurs in like 2 to 3 years. And we're just going to be like, oh, I kind of forgot about this.
I hope not. I hope that's not what happens. But no, they'll follow it, because these guys are getting lawyers. They're going to go to court. Like, this stuff's going to play out in the public eye. And that'll be kind of the determining factor as to how far this is going to go. We'll talk to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star coming up about 5 minutes from now. And I want to get his thought on this, because the NCAA announced earlier that they had their, I don't know what they call them, a meeting. And that's literally what they refer to it as, a meeting in Indianapolis earlier this week with the Division I Transfer Working Group. And they said over the next couple of weeks, they are going to be developing proposals intended to improve the transfer environment for college athletes. They say that they could introduce some new legislation as early as this year, as early as November the 1st. Now, the most significant announcement that could be coming would be one that would eliminate the ability of coaches and schools to restrict players from receiving financial aid after they transfer. Because you hear that all the time. Player X wants to transfer, but the school that he was just at isn't signing the release form. They're not signing the waivers. So those guys are still able to transfer in those situations, like with what the K-State player wanted to do with Bill Snyder just earlier this season. He wanted to transfer. Bill Snyder said he wouldn't allow it. And Bill Snyder came out and said he can transfer, but he's just going to have to pay his own way, because that's how it works. If you don't get clearance from the prior school, then that player has to pay for his own financial aid, which a lot of these guys aren't in a position to do. Well, this new rule would eliminate that. It would eliminate coaches and schools' abilities to block these transfers and block these players from getting financial aid. So this isn't necessarily what so many coaches have referred to as the wild, wild west, where players are transferring to and fro as they please. But it is a step in the right direction. And it is a step in that direction. I'll say this in the same ilk that I talk about players getting paid. If you want to, at this point, like, still put up a fight and say, well, this is why they shouldn't be able to transfer, and this is why these guys need to honor their commitments, that's fine. I mean, and there are some, I think, very valid points on that side. But I'll tell you right now, it's inevitable. It's going to change. Guys are going to have more freedom. It's just the way it's going to work. I don't know if it'll happen in the next 2 years, in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, but eventually it's going to happen. We are trending in the direction of players getting more and more freedom. And if that comes from the aspect of transferring, if that comes from the aspect of them getting compensated for their work, it's just going to happen. So we can keep having these same arguments and discussions, and we should have the discussions. But I'm telling you, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. It's 313 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star joins us next.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 3:15, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Wednesday afternoon. We're getting into that zone. We're getting into that period in limbo where KU fans are trying to decide which program deserves more of their attention. And now the onus is on the KU football program to keep things competitive and keep fans' interest, because we are about a month away from the start of KU's basketball season as we welcome on Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star. So I guess we should start with some basketball since we had late night on Saturday night. Jesse, I'm not going to ask you for specifics from the scrimmage because I'm of the impression that nothing that we saw on Saturday really matters, but I thought you made a good point in one of the pieces you put up on the Star, talking about Billy Preston and how he kind of holds the cards as to what the theme or identity of this Kansas team is going to be this year, with just what type of player he's going to be.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think I call him the most fascinating player, because it's a little bit weird with so many newcomers for KU basketball that it seems like a lot of what is going to happen this year seems to be sort of known. I mean, you figure Devontae Graham's going to be the leader. You figure Malik Newman's coming in, probably going to lead the team in scoring, and that he is able to create his own shot. You know, you sort of know what he is for his senior year, a spot-up shooter, and give a little bit of stability at the guard spot. And then he knows Gerald Vick should be better than he was a year ago, one of the most underrated players Bill Self says in the Big 12, along with Udo Gazabuki getting as many minutes as he can. You know, being healthy, should be able to produce in there. But to me, Billy Preston kind of signifies the ceiling of this team, because if you hear Bill Self talk, it's been crazy. In a two-month span, you know, when he was in Italy, you know, he drew his ire a lot of times. He wanted to kind of fade out to the perimeter, shoot three-pointers, you know, settle for fadeaways. And, you know, Bill Self really got after him for that, screamed at him, called him weak and soft and all those sorts of things. And then the next game, he got in there, did a turnaround move in the lane, kind of put his shoulder down, cleared some space, and Bill Self popped up off the bench, raises both fists in the air, and is really complimentary of how Billy Preston played inside. And so over the course of just a couple of months, you've heard that, and then you've heard Bill Self say in a lot of stories from our own Gary Bedour that from boot camp that he was one of the top performers. And so, again, this could go a lot of different ways for KU. We've seen a player like Billy Preston a year ago for Kansas, in Carlton Bragg, you know, the same sort of skill set, can shoot from the outside, like kind of a big man who likes to play out on the perimeter. It didn't really work out that well. You know, KU didn't play him very often, and then he ended up transferring at the end of the year. So you can see how this goes bad, but you also can hear from Bill Self about how he could be the team's best rebounder, he could be the team's most talented player, he could play his way to a lottery pick after a one-and-done season. So this just has a wide range of outcomes, and I think wherever that lands for Kansas, or wherever that lands for Billy Preston, go a long way toward determining how good Kansas is this year, especially with some of the limitations they have roster-wise. So I'll be fascinated to see kind of what happens with Billy Preston, because I think as he goes, as he develops, and as he, I guess as much as he listens to Coach Self, that could be kind of help determine how well KU plays and how successful KU is throughout the course of this season.
And to take it a step further, like, yes, he determines whether KU can play that traditional 2-and-3 outlook or the small ball that they've kind of employed last year and a little bit the year before. But as we go into this season, just knowing the lack of depth you have in the front court, it seems as though, like, if I'm Bill Self, I'm looking at Billy Preston and saying, no, it's imperative that you are able to play that way, because if you're not, it's not just that we are forced to play small ball, but then all of a sudden, you are putting a huge burden on those three front court players, and if Preston can't do it, then you're pretty much just looking at Mitch Lightfoot and Udoka Azubuki to carry that load, and it seems like that would be a pretty tall order for those guys.
Yeah, listen, I mean, we know the reality of this. In other years, if a guy like Jamari Traylor wasn't performing, you throw in Hunter Mickelson. If he wasn't performing, you throw in Landon Lucas, or go back more years than that, you know. Mm-hmm. If Thomas Robinson wasn't performing, you throw in Jeff Withey. I mean, like, there were options. Bill Self has always had options, but you're right, with only three front court players, if you listen to Bill Self's quotes and you hear what he's said so far, you know, he has some stability in the backcourt. You kind of, again, you know what you're getting. You know what those guys can provide, and they've already shown. Even guys like Malik Newman have shown in Italy what they can do. KU is talented in the front court, but unknown in the front court. You know what I mean? Like, there are Bill Self likes the guys that he has there and the potential that they have, but it's not a proven thing yet. It's not a given. And you make a good point with Udoka Azubuike. You look, Billy Preston's going to have to play some five for this team. And that's why, again, it's so imperative for him to become and have that big man mindset. He needs to be a rebounder for this Kansas team. I mean, we saw how KU play small ball last year with Josh Jackson kind of providing some rebounding in there and doing a really good job of that before. But, you know, KU's going to be forced, if they play small ball, you have a four in there, you know, who is it? LeGerald Dick, maybe? Marcus Garrett, maybe? But it's going to be a big deal for not only the other guards to rebound, but for the five-man to completely clean up the boards. And, again, Udoka Azubuike at this point, he's great when he's in there, but is he going to be foul-prone? Is he going to hold up for the course of a season, you know, injury-wise? That's all remains to be seen. So Billy Preston really needs not only play well for Kansas and to go up to his potential, all those sorts of things, but he needs to have that big man mindset because this KU team desperately needs a big man. They need a rebounder. They need a guy who can be physical down low and do all the things that previous big men have done for Kansas. So, again, that's going to be something to watch throughout the course of the year, just to see how Billy Preston develops and how much he buys into what Bill Self is asking of him. Because, again, we saw a similar situation last year. KU needed Carlton Bragg to be the backup five, and it never really came about, and it was tough sledding for you know, Carlton for basically the entire season. So we'll see how it turns out for Billy Preston. It seems to me like through the words that Bill Self is saying so far, it seems pretty evident that he's trying to get through to him already. This is what you need to not only be successful for your future career and your future pro prospects, but this is what KU needs to have the best season as well.
Talking to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. How optimistic are you that LeGerald Vick can do the things necessary, talking about rebounding his position, defending his position, the things that you know Bill Self holds very near and dear to his heart? How confident are you that he's going to be able to do that at that stretch four position, if you want to call it that?
Well, I think he's probably the best candidate to do it, and you saw it work in Italy with the four-guard look. I think here's one thing. If you're going to have a four-man try to guard you know, a guy that's bigger than him in there, you want someone who's athletic, who's kind of explosive athletically, can make up for a little bit of lost ground by maybe jumping up and trying to block shots or being quick to the ball. And that's why really it didn't work last year for Sima Kailuk. He is just kind of a different sort of player. He really struggled in that position last year. But LeGerald Vick did better. He still was foul-prone with it. You know, I think it's almost more this. And we've seen Bill Self kind of evolve in the last couple years to this. You know, there really wasn't much of this four-guard lineup before last year for Kansas at all. I mean, he's always had big men. He's always played this 3-out-2 in style. So it might just be, and this is going to be difficult. You're right. It's absolutely difficult. But it might just be more of an evolution for Bill Self because of the pieces he has to say, look, I'm going to have to grin and bear it sometimes on the defensive end because this four-guard offense can be so good on the other end. I mean, it's maybe less looking at, okay, what is the matchup when LeGerald Vick is going against a true four and flipping it around and saying, how in the world is the other team going to guard LeGerald Vick, who has kind of started to develop point guard skills for Kansas and an ability to drive, to pass, to get to the rim, all those sorts of things. And so it's almost kind of reshaping your thinking. And you know, we know this. More basketball is going to sort of positionless basketball and to you kind of care more about the roles that guys can fit and how they play together, all those sorts of things. So it just might be another reimagining of how Kansas plays basketball under Bill Self. Again, you're right. We know Kansas is a team that always is tough, always is the defensive rebounding team, and always is great at offensive rebounding, and that he values those things very dear. But, again, I think we saw an evolution from him last year, and he saw how well his team could play offensively with that sort of four-guard lineup, that it just might be another half-step revolution for Bill Self just to say, look, I'm going to demand all these things of my guys, and they're going to do the best they can defensively, but I know if I'm playing LeGerald Vick at the four defensively, I'm doing it because it's going to be a dynamite, dangerous offensive team, and it's going to be a very tough offensive team for other teams to stop. So, again, we'll see what happens. I think the biggest concern you have, and it's the same thing with Udoka Azubuike, it's the same thing if you put Marcus Garrett in there, is just foul. And with this roster with only non-scholarship players, you don't want to get guys in foul trouble early because there's not many options you have to go to, at least at this point. So I think if LeGerald Vick can avoid fouls, he can plug in there as well as you need him to, just to make it so that KU can be so dynamite and so explosive on the other end offensively that it's going to be very, very difficult for any team to guard that.
before the season began, I want to talk a little football with you. We kind of looked at this Texas Tech game as one that might be interesting because Texas Tech seemed like they were poised for a lackluster season. Cliff Kingsbury was seemingly on the hot seat, and they've looked really impressive through the first month of the year. So now as they come into Memorial on Saturday, perhaps you're not as optimistic as you would have been a month ago, but with this team coming off the bye, David Beatty talked about doing a lot of self-scout over the last week. Are you encouraged at all that this Kansas team is heading in the right direction and can give the fans a good game on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a tricky game. It's almost a lot like the West Virginia game, and that's why that West Virginia game was kind of tough to gauge because Kansas was down 8 points in the fourth quarter, and that was a lot closer than people thought and had a chance to win after building a big hole. But yet, you know, the mistakes and some of the fluky things that happen, and all of a sudden, you know, you lose that game 56-34. You don't cover the spread, and then you kind of ask yourself, well, was that progress? I mean, staying close in the fourth quarter was not what people expected, but in the end, it's still another result where the score is worse than even Vegas would have predicted. I think it's not a secret. Here's the problem for Kansas as you go up against Texas Tech, as you go up against Cliff Kingsbury, as you really go up against any offense, because Ohio threw all over the yard against you. You know what I mean? Like, if Ohio, Mr. Frank Solich, run the ball down your throat, out-physically you, decided that his team needed to throw the ball all over the yard against you, then Texas Tech is going to do that and probably have success with it as well. I mean, I think there are positives. I think KU's offensive line has looked great. I think they're getting something in the run game. I think they found something with using, you know, fullbacks like Hudson Hall and Caperton Humphrey and opened up holes and done some good things offensively that haven't shown up in the past. It just really hasn't mattered because of the secondary issues. And then we got to start mentioning the defensive line. I know the teams are scheming against Kansas. I know that teams are trying to get quick releases, but three sacks in four games is not enough, especially for what I considered a defensive line that's two guys that I think will be playing on Sundays in Doran Armstrong and Daniel Wise. So they've got to start to demand more out of themselves as well. So, you know, I think that there are good things offensively. I think there's reasons to like KU's chances against Texas Tech's defense, which really they've kind of just forced some turnovers, and other than that, haven't stopped many people defensively. But it's just a matter of how much can you stop Texas Tech's offense, because there's been many games in the past few years where KU hasn't really done much to slow down a Cliff Kingsbury team in the past. So, yeah, I think it probably comes down to turnovers. I mean, that's an easy way. We know they're worth about 5 points each, and KU has not been good at getting takeaways from other teams. I think two forced fumbles and two interceptions through four games this year. And, I mean, they clumped them all together last year against Texas. That's how a big upset happens. Texas has six turnovers. KU gets a big upset win at home. I think that's the number you look at. I mean, can KU force some turnovers against Texas Tech, get a few stops where you don't expect, and then maybe, you know, hold Texas Tech under 50 or so and then get the offense really revved up and see where it takes you. But I think you need to kind of clump those together. You clump together some turnovers and make some plays offensively, you got yourself a chance, but that really hasn't happened so far, at least in the last three games for Kansas as we look at their schedule.
He's Jesse Newell. You can check out all of his work in the Kansas City Star and at KUHoops.com. Appreciate the time as always, man.
All right, sounds good, Nick. Thanks.
All righty, thank you. That is Jesse Newell. I am Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. KU and Texas Tech on Saturday kick off at 11, but pregame coverage will start with the countdown to kickoff on the Hill at 9 o'clock right here on KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 418, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll talk to Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs, coming up here in just a couple of minutes. You know, what's fascinating about the Chiefs' offense is they're essentially doing it without a typical number one wide receiver. I know in terms of what their offense does, Tyreek Hill is that guy. But when we throw that blanket statement out, which maybe is our fault for the vernacular that we use when talking about offenses, but the Chiefs don't really have that guy who I think a lot of people would consider to be your prototypical number one wide receiver, yet they've been the most efficient offense in the NFL through the first month of the season. Let's welcome on the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holthus. Mitch, fun time to be a Chiefs fan right now, huh?
Week to week, man. Yes, it is fun. And that game Monday night was a challenge, but fun. But you stay locked in and think 32 NFL teams, and only one remains undefeated.
Isn't that crazy? We're a month into the season, and the Chiefs are the lone unbeaten team.
Yeah, with a tough schedule. I mean, with two road games and then three really hard games, the hardest place to win on the road, at least in the last 17 years, not this year with New England. But then you're looking at, I'm telling you, the Cowboys might be the third best NFC East team. I think the Redskins and Eagles are both really tough. So, yeah, I mean, it's who they've beaten, how they've won, and push on here. To outscore your opponents 54-13 in the fourth quarter is noteworthy.
Well, and you mentioned it was a challenge on Monday night, and I thought that was perhaps my biggest takeaway, was that it didn't look like the same wins that maybe we've seen through the first 3 weeks. It looked like it was their most difficult task once the game did get going, but they just found a way to win, and that is a hallmark of great teams, is winning not maybe by how you wanted to do it, but just grinding it out. It speaks to Andy Reid, it speaks to Alex Smith, because those have been kind of themes of what we've come to expect from those guys in Kansas City, certainly this year as well.
Speaks to the mental and physical toughness of this team. I would say the only thing comparable would be the first half against New England, down 17-7, when that's before we knew New England was playing eight-man football and have to, you know, they give up 40 points a week. So, it's a very good sign for this team to win in different ways, and they have yet to win in one of the great recipes, or a couple of great recipes, that they've used in the 4 years prior to this one, and that is a special teams play or a defensive play that wins a game, and I still think that's coming. That's been their M.O.
When a guy like Kareem Hunt comes into the league and just sets it on fire through his first 3 weeks, I think that the natural reaction is just to kind of say, okay, nobody does this, so I'm just waiting for him to come back down to earth. I'm waiting for him to cool off a little bit. And maybe early in that game on Monday, you started to think, okay, maybe this is where he kind of comes back to reality. But in that fourth quarter, in that second half, he just wore that Redskins defense down. A really good Redskins defense. We're running out of accolades to throw on this guy, and he's only a month into his NFL career, but watching the way that he just stayed strong there in that second half was a sight to behold.
And I mentioned it, he's a fantasy football, you know, find. Everybody that's got him is crushing their fantasy league, but he's doing it in reality football style, and that is tough yards and the biggest yards at the biggest time of the game, particularly in the second half, and most specifically in the fourth quarter. That's a really good sign about his stamina and stick-to-itiveness in this league. Now, will he adjust to the mean kind of? Yeah, you'd think so, but still. I mean, he's a crazy yards per carry, and he's shown the propensity to be a receiver. People were asking me today in another show, who's he remind you of? And I was thinking, you know, really, Edgerrin James. If you think of Edgerrin James when he was just tearing it up for the Colts in 99, 2000, 01, right in there, I mean, because of his size, balance, and his ability to catch the ball, that's what separates him. He's got power and balance and speed and toughness, but he can catch the ball as well. So he's a double-double threat.
We're talking to the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. A lot's been made about the league, the ratings declining. People want to say it's because offenses just aren't as good as they've been. You've got a lot of great quarterbacks who are perhaps in their twilights of their careers, but the Chiefs' offense is thriving, and it's not just relative to what everyone else is doing. Like, Alex Smith has had a historical start to his season. This offense is doing things that other teams simply aren't, and we've talked about it a lot over the first month of the season, but now that we are about a quarter away through the regular season, what do you see that the Chiefs are doing that other teams either can't or just aren't?
Well, let's back up to the whole NFL. Oh, it's waning in interest. You know, blah, 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 blah. Wait a minute. I mean, our radio broadcast pulls 70 shares. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy. Like, that means three-fourths of every radio tunes into the game. There's something called WALL, watch, attend, listen, and every team's rated, and the Chiefs are near the top of the list. Who's watching, attending, and listening, both men and women? I don't buy it. I mean, it's almost like a kid that you get the A-plus in school in Mr. Vinduska's class at Seaman, and you get an A-minus, and your parents are going, what is wrong with you?
Right.
I mean, ask the TV networks. They get nothing that pulls numbers like the NFL. Well, it's off 30%. Well, it was already at, like, you know, 2,000%, so it's at 1,970. I mean, I kind of get a little weary of the talk. All right, now, what are the Chiefs doing that some other teams are not doing? I think it's Andy Reid's ingenuity. They run different plays different ways, or the same play different ways. It's really crazy. They ran a play the other night everybody in the league is just crowing about, and that is they pulled the guard. So it looks like they say, hey, follow the guard. He'll lead you to the play. The linebackers, you see him flowing. Whoops, wait a minute. It's a one-man blocking play the other way. It ends up being a counter where the blocking is unusual, and still you still have more blockers than they have defenders. And Kareem Hunt busted it out for 17 yards. It's Andy Reid up there on his whiteboard as Russell Crowe putting up algorithms. I mean, he's up there now doing it again, like thinking of stuff. He really is the most imaginative guy right now in the NFL from an offensive standpoint. And then you throw in the weapons, and I know that he doesn't look like a number one receiver, but I'm telling you, Tyreek Hill, he's not done having 100-yard receiving games, okay? So he's going to be up there now that he's getting more targets, he's getting more production. But I would tell you, Andy Reid's offensive prowess sets this team apart from the rest just because he really thinks at some other level.
And what's so impressive to me, and it was on full display there on Monday night, this Chiefs offense is being ravaged by injuries. And there are plays which Alex Smith doesn't even have a shot to get that ball off, yet he's been the best quarterback in the NFL. How do those two things exist at the same time? Because it would seem like if you don't have time to throw, if you are just getting absolutely destroyed in that backfield the way that Alex Smith really has this year, that it would lead to interceptions. It would lead to low completion percentages. But he's amongst the league's best through the first month of the season.
Well, he is the best. He's the top-rated quarterback in the NFL. His completion percentage is ridiculous. 8 touchdowns, no picks. Only Tom Brady is better with 10 touchdowns and no picks. I would answer it this way. One, his toughness is underrated. I've talked about that with you since he's been here, so not going into 5 years. His athleticism is underrated, but his mental approach to the game, I don't know if it's because he's been around the block 10 times or what, but he'll be frustrated, take a hit, frustrated, and then bang, he'll come up with the big play. It deflates the defense because they're thinking it's a little bit of a Russell Wilson. It's what Russell Wilson does to you when Seattle's playing good ball and they've got a decent enough offensive line. Or it's honestly what an Aaron Rodgers will do. You got him stopped. You watch those NFC North teams and the Vikings and the Bears and the Lions, like, we got him now. And then boom, he'll do a play. And you're like, you gotta be kidding me. Well, that's what it's what Alex Smith is doing now. The other thing I would say, and it's a big jump up, and this has been kind of my thesis of the week, has been and I'm really gonna get into it next week. So ask me about the golden triangle of third down, red zone, and 2 minute. It's not been really that good for the Chiefs from 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. It's been an A in red zone. They're top three in the league, led the league most of the year. But the two-minute offense is just dramatically different. Think about the two-minute. I mentioned the 17-7 deficit at New England. It was a two-minute offense at the end of the half that got the Chiefs within three that changed that entire game. Now, how many times have you sat there as a Chiefs fan? Let's go back in your young life and thought, okay, 20-20 at home. Chiefs had the ball at their own 25. 47 seconds left, 2 timeouts. What are you thinking in the back of your mind?
I'm thinking, well, if I'm a young Chiefs fan, I'm thinking, uh-oh, I know how this game ends. I've seen this a time or two before.
Well, if you're a longtime Chiefs fan, you're going, okay, you're going to call heads or tails? Oh, wait a minute, the other team gets to call it for overtime. How are we going to handle overtime? Did you have in the thought of your head that, well, they're going to go down and score right
now?
No. Okay, so that's the difference in this 2017 team. In my mind, I thought the same way you or the older fans did until this year. Because I've seen this team struggle in the 2 minute. At that instance, I go, nope, not this year, not this group. They may go down and get a field goal. And then Wilson makes an incredible play. And Alex Smith makes an Aaron Rodgers play, staying parallel to the line of scrimmage, running 90 degrees, full bore toward the other sideline, and then throws a tough strike to an adjusted route from Albert Wilson, who makes the catch against his face mask like David Tyree in the Super Bowl. I mean, those are plays that were not being made by this team. They won the last 4 years, but they haven't been very good in the 2 minutes. So far, this team has been really good in the 2 minute offense, And that separates it from the at least the recent past.
Well, and it kind of started last year, right? Like, I think back to the season opener against San Diego. I think about the game against Denver. Alex Smith is a guy that he possesses a trait that very few quarterbacks in the NFL, like Washington Redskins fans probably like Kirk Cousins, but I was listening to their coverage after the game, and they were asking questions. Is he the type of guy who can make those plays late in the game? Alex Smith, for all of the knocks that people have wanted to throw his way over the years, he has established himself as the type of dude that you want quarterbacking your offense in those late game situations, because he has come up big time and time again. I don't think we talk enough about it.
And he's productive without turning it over. Now, that's the difference between him and a Big Ben or even a Rodgers. Rodgers will throw in, I wouldn't put Rodgers in that instance, but a Big Ben or a Ryan or even an there's the next group of guys. But the guys that have high productivity that don't turn it over, Brady's the poster child for it. Last year, 25 touchdowns, 2 picks. And then Rodgers. Rodgers rarely will throw you the ball. If he doesn't have Jordy Nelson, he might. Because they were abysmal in that Atlanta game when Nelson got hurt. But that's what Alex is doing this year. High productivity, accuracy without turning it over. And you're going to win a lot of the time when that happens.
I said yesterday that even if you want to nitpick this team, which I guess there are things you can kind of point to and say that you need to get this shored up, the Chiefs are the only team in the NFL where the fans don't have a right to complain today. Because I tell you what, the Falcons, they lost their first game of the season. I promise you, in Atlanta, they're talking all week about what went wrong, what they need to fix, why this team is screwed. They saw it coming a long time out. Cowboys.
They lost to the Bills.
Right. Right, and the Cowboys and the Patriots, those fan bases had high expectations for those teams coming into the season, and now they're sitting there at 2-2. You are a month into the season. You are the lone unbeaten team left. Like, I just want to take some time to step back and smell the roses, because NFL fans, they are fanatics, and they will turn pretty quickly from being everything is great to, oh my gosh, we're doomed. The Chiefs are the only fan base in football right now who can't complain about everything, because everything has seemingly went right so far.
Well, and they'll find something to complain about. But let's go back to your thing. Well, the ratings are down. The NFL's not as popular. I would challenge you to say it's really popular, because people almost sometimes like to be down on their team. They have all week to chew on it and talk about it. They like that. If you're, they're telling me about the NBA's popularity. Well, outside of LeBron and Kyrie not getting along, who cares about the Brooklyn Nets and the New Orleans Pelicans on a Tuesday night, because they're going to play Thursday night against the Grizzlies? They're not sitting there Wednesday at the water cooler going, man, I can't believe we're not passing the ball better. It's not the case. But in the NFL, man, every little bitty thing gets looked at, and fans love it because they can look at every little bitty thing, and they have all week to talk about it. It really appeals to the fans. If you're a Chiefs fan, I guess you could say defensively, maybe giving up too many yards, because if you look at total yards allowed, they're not getting teams off the field. That would be the thing that I would say you could say, wait a minute, what's going on with this defense? And that could be a problem against the Houston Texans. No team has attempted more runs in the last 4 years than the Houston Texans. They love to run it and then throw to DeAndre Hopkins, and now they've got Deshaun Watson to run or throw. But you're right. There just isn't a whole lot to break down or get really complaining about this team, because Alex Smith's been a lightning rod, even though he's the winningest quarterback in Chiefs history in four years and four games. I mean, it's crazy. Just take a minute, Nick. You talk about smelling the roses, and I would say smell the pizza. I would say smell the pizza at Papa John's at 9th and Mississippi. Walk out of the studios. You guys are not that far from the intergalactic headquarters of Bruce Collinsworth and Papa John's Pizza of Lawrence. So just smell the pizza and think about this. The Chiefs are 26-4 in their last 30 regular season games.
That's incredible.
26-4. Nobody's even close to that. And yet people are like, well, I don't know about Alex Smith. He's the game manager. He wins games. His road record going into this game, since he's been a Chief quarterback, is 22 wins and 11 losses. The only quarterback who's better on the road since Alex Smith became the starting Chiefs quarterback is Tom Brady. And he is at 22-10. So if he loses Thursday night at Tampa Bay in their 8-man game, then, and the Chiefs win on Sunday Night Football, he'll be tied with Brady for the best winning road record in the NFL for almost 4.5 years. You can't argue against it.
Nope. People still will. People will still find ways
they
to
will.
Argue.
Oh, no, they will. That's right. They want to nitpick at something. They're going to nitpick at Brian Witzman having two holding calls, but they're going to, you know, they'll nitpick about Alex.
Don't nitpick Brian Witzman's touchdown dance there with Travis Kelce, though, because that was spectacular.
How about us now? I saw Witzman today. We have two engineers on this team. Witzman is a civil engineer, went to South Dakota State. He's a jackrabbit. And now this Harrison Butker guy, he's an industrial engineer from Georgia Tech. They're sitting there doing a series of differential equations in the locker room. I'm like, what? We're supposed to play cornhole or something with the thing that Todd Haley left. But, these guys are way smarter than I am. I'm kind of getting intimidated. But I kind of like it because, you know, I'm a Northwestern fan.
That's right. He's Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs. And, Mitch, the 4-0 record by the Chiefs, it's the second best streak in sports right now. But it doesn't come close to the streak of 84 consecutive correct high school mascots named by you, which is still intact today. And I'm not complaining.
You've got me vulnerable. You've got me vulnerable.
I know.
Because I'm off my timing, right? It's out of the routine. This
right.
Is it's Monday night, Sunday night, Thursday night coming up. What do we do? Is this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? What is this? You're talking to Nick, but I don't know. Is it Wednesday? I don't know. So that's where I'm at right now.
Well, I just want to let you know, just harking back to last week, you got Hoxie right. And, of course, my grandmother is an alumni of Hoxie, but she did have one minor complaint saying you didn't mention anything about the historic twirling program at Hoxie High School, which my grandma was a part of. So I just wanted to throw that out there and pass it along.
I'm guessing she was the Northwest Kansas League twirling champion for the Hoxie Indians back in the old NWKL.
Probably,
here's
yeah.
Here's what the NWKL used to do, because that was the premier wrestling league. Still isn't some, but that league's not the same. They're all different, you know, because Colby and Goodland were in the same league with Hoxie and St. Francis and Atwood. It's crazy. But still, they would play basketball at one place and go wrestle at the other. And there might be 1,500 people at the wrestling match and 15 people at the basketball game. I mean, that's the way that league was. It was not for the faint of heart. There's a lot of great men and women that came from the old Northwest Kansas League.
All right, we got you backed up against the wall. Let's hit you with the first one, Sacred Heart High School.
The Sacred Heart Knights of Salina. They've had the greatest team. And a former KU undergrad, Brian Shea, was on this team. Jimmy Otto was on this team, played at K-State as a wide receiver. They had another big kid in the middle. Martin played in the middle. He played small college basketball. But they were undefeated in both football and basketball one year. The 1975 season. They won everything and everybody they could find. So the Sacred Heart Knights have a great tradition.
All right. Up next, Canton Galva High School.
The Canton Galva Eagles. This gets close to home because my wife's family on the maternal side is from Roxbury. They were the Lions. That school went down in 69 when they did all the consolidation. Most of them went to Lindsberg. But the most hated rivals they had were the Galva Chieftains and I think the Canton Bulldogs. But then they went together. No, it was the Canton Eagles. But then they went together to make the Canton Galva Eagles. So just east of McPherson on 56 Highway on the original Santa Fe Trail.
Pawnee Heights.
Pawnee Heights Tigers. Okay, this is Roselle and Burdette together. There's a great book written. This is another required reading. And you never read Our Boys.
It's still a work in progress. I told you I read it at fourth grade level. I read a chapter, I go back, I read a chapter, I do a little quiz at the end of each chapter, we take notes over it, and then I start the next chapter the next week. I don't want to speed through this thing and miss any important plot points.
Well, I'm gonna challenge you here, Jamarcus. Remember, was it Jamarcus? Who's the guy that at Oakland goes, hey, what'd you think of the tape? I mean, I saw cover two and cover four. Wait a minute, the tape was blank. We tricked you. So, how far did you get in Our Boys? Have you gone any place there you can give me a reference where you're at?
I think I'm at page 50. I want to say. We're talking about the leaders of the team going around and challenging the rest of the guys on the team, letting them know that from now on, those summer workouts, they're mandatory. Everybody needs to be there because they needed a leader on the team. They didn't really have one.
Now you're good. Good. You're getting it. It only gets better from there. Our boys have at the Smith Center Redmond of 08. Anyway, there's a great book out about Double B basketball. all the way up until 68, 69. That was the year of all the consolidation. Double B was the smallest class in Kansas. Burdette and Roselle both won double B state titles. Burdette had a guy named Larry Friend, went on to a brilliant coaching career, mostly at Plainville. He burned me in a double reverse pass that caused me to get chewed out at the hash mark on the field, embarrassed me in front of my family. But anyway, Larry Friend ran that stinking double reverse pass. Great coach, but played at Burdette, state champion. Roselle had Ray Patterson, a great player at Wichita State, running back, stud. Fantastic mentor to young people throughout the state. He passed way too soon. Burdette and Roselle went together and formed the Pawnee Heights Tigers. He also a graduate of that school, was the father of my daughter-in-law, Greg Bauer. So, I mean, it just keeps going with the Pawnee Heights Tigers. But a great tradition there in all sports.
All right, last one, Life Prep High School.
Oh, no, you got me. You got me. Life Prep out of Wichita.
Yeah.
You got me.
Wow.
You nailed me.
Oh,
Life
my.
Prep, I'm going to guess. No, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess. Because I got no clue about Life Prep. Aren't they at Wichita?
Yes, and they're in Wichita, so you got that much.
The Flames.
Oh, man, you were close. Oh, it's the Life Prep High School Fire. It's the fire, man.
I was close. I knew it was something.
Oh, man, you were right there. Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
I go down.
I just want you to know that I have no enjoyment in stumping you, okay? This brings me no pleasure stumping you like that in the midst of a historic streak. So I want to let you know I'm on Team Holtis, and this pains me as much as it does you.
So I'm going to call you. If I call you Ali Farouk Manesh, you're not going to...
No, that's fine.
You're not going to be, yeah, because that's what I'm feeling right now.
Oh, man. So, I hate to do it.
Oh,
I hate to end it on that.
I got
but...
to 87-1.
That's
right. You realize now, the last 2 years I've lost, it's been private Christian schools.
Yeah, I know your weakness. I know your weakness now.
You got it. It's the NFL. Now I'm going to go. I'm gonna up all night watching tape.
Wow.
So give me all of the private Christian schools in Kansas you can find. And so, yes, you found my blind spot.
Wow, Mitch Holtis exposed on a Wednesday edition of RCSD.
The Life Prep Fire.
Well, back to the drawing board, my friend.
Okay, yeah, if I'm crushed. I'll be up all night now. Oh, my gosh. I don't know what to do. I'm going to go get some pizza and eat myself into a food coma at 9th in Mississippi.
Appreciate you, Mitch. Have fun on the call and see
you guys.
All righty.
Yes, sir. All right.
That's the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, on RCST. I'm Nick Schwert. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Kansas volleyball is starting about 20 minutes from now, so we'll come back on the other side and wrap things up.